Hey, what's good, everyone? Gazali Orella here. Go Muluku podcast, new episode. This is day three, actually, episode two of the daily debrief. Because yesterday on day two, I was super tired, so I was not in the physical state to be able to do a debrief. So we're going to combine day two and day three into this this brief daily debrief.
This is the Go Maluku podcast.
Obviously, yesterday was day two of COP28, and as always, we start off with a coordination meeting where all the Indigenous peoples gather, and we bring to the table what the agenda is of the day per negotiating stream. So, for example, my focus is Article 6 and loss of damage, so I bring to the table, like, all right, so are there any updates on the topic, or what is the on the agenda for those items? And then, like, you have a global stock take is obviously also a point of interest for Indigenous people, so those vocal points bring an update. And then there's a lot of other things that also are being put to the table as they arise. As you probably can hear, like, my voice is like kind of disappearing a little bit, and we're only at day three. It's not because of something, it's just because, like, it's totally hot outside, and inside these buildings it is like AC is going like nuts. So you go from hot to cold, hot to cold, hot to cold, so it has an effect on my voice. In addition to the smog, obviously Dubai is like Las Vegas on steroids. And in the morning, when you make your way to the venue, it is pretty obvious that you cannot see in the distance because it's smog. Like, it kind of like blurs your vision. Anyway, sidestepped. That's because of my voice. I apologize for that. Daily debrief, and then you head into like your agenda. So there were some meetings on 6.2, 6.4, and 6.8, and also those three are the first meeting. So it's a bit of a like, all right, what are we going to do for the next couple of weeks? And particularly on 6.4, it is interesting because the supervisory body put forward their reports and the documents, the methodologies, as well as removals, and it is up to the CMA to decide whether they are going to like go along with these recommendations, or whether they are going to send back the recommendations with some notes. So that was the expectation for the meetings on Article 6. 6.8, obviously, non-market approaches. They're still trying to figure out what those are. And then you have, in terms of loss and damage, obviously everyone was talking about the loss and damage fund being finally operationalized after a year of negotiations. And I looked online, and I looked on X, and I looked on LinkedIn, and everyone was like, yeah, like ecstatic, like, wow, we finally have a loss and damage fund. Critical thinking and skepticism is part of the job. And when you look through the text, there are some serious concerns when it comes to protecting the rights of Indigenous peoples and human rights, participation of Indigenous peoples. There are some references, but it's murky. There's a lot of room for interpretation. And obviously that is a product of negotiation. So the Loss and Damage Fund, yes, it's been operationalized. And yes, there's like 400 million in pledges so far, and a number of pledges will be brought forward as we progress. Obviously, there's also World Summit on Climate Action. All these heads of state are coming in. I was almost ran over by Lula's car twice. So they drive around, by the way, they drive around in like golf carts over here. Like, white ones are for like the normal people, and the black ones are like for the VVIPs. So anyway, black one, VVIP, almost ran over by Lula. Anyway, so there's an expectation that there are some pledges coming in from heads of state, heads of government. The thing that we also need to keep in mind is that next to the Loss and Damage Fund, you also have the Santiago Network on Loss and Damage. There's a difference. And in putting it very bluntly, very black and white, the Loss and Damage Fund deals with monetary issues. The Santiago Network deals with non-monetary issues. Basically trying to be like a platform for expert and technical advice to avert and mitigate loss and damage. So it's you have developing countries that require technical advice and knowledge and everything else, and there are in this case developed countries that can provide it. So that particular process is now being operationalized as well, and that's what they will continue discussing. The Santiago Network over here at COP. The main topic of discussion for the Santiago Network will be the host. Of the Santiago Network secretariat, and there are some eligible hosts being proposed at this point, and we'll see how that progresses. From an indigenous people's point of view, like, we do not have a skin in the game when it comes to host. However, there is an opportunity. It is in a decision text that a indigenous people's representatives or IPO constituency representative can part of the advisory board as a full member, but actually to participate in the work. So that is an opportunity to ensure that the rights of Indigenous peoples, the participation of Indigenous peoples, the interests of Indigenous peoples are being promoted and protected. The marching orders, the requirements, the guidelines of the technical advisor being provided at the Santiago Network. It includes that it needs to be in line or takes into account the principles of the 11th preamble paragraph of the Paris Agreement, which means human rights, rights of Indigenous peoples. So in a way, this indigenous person that is going to take on that role, first and foremost, will need to provide guidance on how to operationalize that particular paragraph, that particular marching order, in the work of the Santiago Network. And from indigenous people's point of view, it is my hope that during COP28, there will be either a selection process or ideally a person to be nominated to take on that role. Obviously, that particular person, preferably Global South, but I'm unemotional about that. But I am emotional about that person needs to have like a human rights background, because the marching orders are clear, and it is important that person is able to operationalize it. Am I that person? Absolutely not. I think I made it clear so far that I'm interested in providing spaces, opening up spaces, providing platforms, being the anti-embulo in all this. However, I'm unemotional about taking negotiating roles and then taking them. For example, the facilitated working group, I was unemotional about that because I'd rather do this. By the way, behind me, if you can't see it, but you definitely can hear it, there's this huge dome of the Expo City. And there's a lot of things going on. However, it's invite only. So you can only see it from the outside, and it looks amazing. They project things and images and shapes on that dome, but inside it's invite only. So probably we'll never see the inside of it anyway. All right, Santiago Network, Just Transition also started to have this conversation. Though Just Transition is not part of my scope of work, it's I cover Article 6, I cover loss and damage. However, there is a thing what we need to see is that Just Transition, the just transition that is required, that is, that respects the rights of Indian peoples, that respects the lifestyles of Indian peoples, it is actually like a cross-cutting issue. So it is very interesting how that conversation goes on just transition. However, right now it is purely focused on the workforce. But if you look at it like on a higher level, just transition is something like, well, how do you transition from one situation into another situation? So for example, a fossil fuel situation to a clean energy situation, whilst respecting the rights and participation and livelihoods of Indigenous peoples. So that particular just transition, that is interesting for Indigenous peoples, and that is going there as part of our strategy. Is what we're going to do is like implement it. Like, it's bits and pieces, slice it and dice it in many ways, and then put it into other processes to ensure that there are elements, seeds, if you may, in all these processes when it comes to just transition, when it comes to human rights and everything else. So that was yesterday, right? Santiago Network, however, they started the meeting, and you could like already like anticipated that it was like general statements about the pledges that have been made, the operationalization of the loss and damage fund, and they continued on that. So after like four or five speeches, you're like, all right, I know what's coming. I'm not going to turn it off, or I'm going to step out. But like you start to like on your laptop, you start doing other stuff. that was on Santiago Network and just transition. By the way, so that you know, the COP started on Thursday, and today is Saturday, and which messes with people's heads, because usually COP starts on Monday, so we're still in this Wednesday mode, but for the entire world, it's Saturday right now, and Sunday usually is a day off, but not here at COP. Actually, Sunday is going to be like a very busy day when you look at the agenda, look at the schedule. There are so many events that are relevant to Article 6, are relevant to loss and damage, and those are just the negotiations. Then there are like side events that might be interesting. So on Sunday, it's usually is, you know, like, all right, relax. Let's go to, Burj Khalifa or Burj Al Arab. But it's actually like, all right, no, it's a full-on working day. So people actually, my friends have been telling me like, all right, hey, have fun this weekend. Like, you deserve it and everything else. And I'm like, ha, yeah, right. Weekend, not so much. It's just like full-on work day. So what I also wanted to touch upon, and I'm sorry for like going like a monkey from tree branch to tree branch in terms of days. Yesterday, there's an important meeting that happened for the first time this COP, which is they were in the constituency meeting on, which is called the Working Group on Human Rights and Climate Change. So all the constituencies that they gather, and they, you know, it's like a coordination meeting. All right, so. Women and gender, what are your priorities? What is going on in adaptation? What's going on in loss and damage, et cetera, et cetera. It's good because many times, like everyone is like super focused, you know, but it's also good from time to time to get your head out of the weeds and look and see actually what other people are seeing, and then filling those gaps, you know, some things that you know, but they don't, or some things that they don't know, but you know. And it is in these types of meetings, actually, that is super important to start sharing information. Like, it's, though Indigenous peoples are not civil society organizations, it's very clear. However, you know, it is very helpful to coordinate with them. They are very well organized. They have a very good social media appearance and strategy. So it's not that we're gonna piggyback on their work. However, it's good to, you know, it's good to consolidate where possible. Definitely coordinate some of our views, activities, and messaging. So that's like a meeting that usually happens like once, once in a week, like in the beginning. And then the second week starts, and then you do another one. But like for now, I've heard that there will be several. They had one yesterday, and they had one today. So the Human Rights Climate Change Working Group is super important, and it's as part of the Article 6 and Loss and Damage team, advocacy team, negotiating team, whatever you want to call it. What we try to do is like we try to like divide and conquer. So basically, there's caucus meeting at the beginning of the day, and then the problem is that they're negotiating streams. So you try to find a gap in the agenda for your team to coordinate. So sometimes it's at 12, sometimes it can be at 3, but it is important that you try to do to coordinate on a daily basis to check in. All right, so what do you know? What do you know? What do you know? And share information, make each other smarter, so that all the information does not stick with just one person, but actually like everyone knows enough to be able to like, or when you run into a meeting with, I don't know, Macron or whoever, that you can actually like, a lot of the bullet points, like the punchlines, like, all right, this is what we need to, on Article 6, this is what we need to launch the damage, and those kind of things. So coordination meeting is what we do is, all right, this is the agenda of the day. This happened yesterday. What do we know? What do we not know? All right, so what can we do to fill that gap? And these meetings are upcoming. Who can go? So 6-2, 6-4, 6-8. So those are three separate negotiating streams of Article 6. There's a Human Rights and Climate Change Working Group. So you send someone over there. Mostly it's myself, go to 6-2, 6-4, and 6-8. Santiago Network, Just Transition. Like you try to, it's to be the quarterback. Like you go there, you would go to that meeting, you could go to that meeting. And then at the end of the day, or through Signal, through the phone, what we try to do is to consolidate. All right, what did you learn? What did you learn? What did you do? All right, what's the play? What's the play for tomorrow? So that's what what we do in a coordination meeting, and then actually that's like in person, mostly in person, and then we coordinate throughout the day, but like the tone has set or has been set in the morning. So coordination meeting is super important when you have an advocacy team, and then what you do is you're privy of everything that's going on, and you listen. And especially in these COP contexts, in the climate change negotiations, everyone wants to have that scoop. Like consultants, junior diplomats, junior staffers, whoever, like everyone wants to have that scoop. Like, I know something that you don't know. So like, and then they like act super interesting. But that is like not helpful for if you want to like devise a strategy or steer your strategy into direction that it needs to be if you want to avoid a big iceberg like the Titanic. So it is super important that when information comes to you or when people bring information to you or you read something, that you try to separate the signal from the noise. So there's a lot of noise, a lot of information. So you try to separate the signal. What is actually true and what is actually accurate? The thing is, like, we all have assumptions. When it comes to negotiations, we all have assumptions. And it is super important that in negotiations that you check your assumptions. So I know, I think I know something about you, but is that actually true? You don't know until I don't know until I actually ask you. However, in any conversation, it could be negotiations or, I don't know, like you fell in love with someone. Like, it's always very intimidating to ask that question, a question that actually you're supposed to be asking. So what do? You ask other people. You know, you start to triangulate in some way. Whereas the direct approach is the best. So the next best thing, aside from the direct approach, is asking, you know, like, not beating around the bush, but actually like trying to get to it by asking not one question, but three questions, you know? So that's how you check your assumptions. And you can, because you cannot continue or devise a strategy based on what you think, or how you think that the world is running, or how you think that, or it's even better, or based on what you read on online, or what you see on TV, you know, because like what the TV tells you is what the TV tells you to. However, like, it's different when you actually go and get the information yourself, right? So that's like the whole purpose of lobbying. It's trying to get smarter. It's not about like convincing someone else about like about what you need to do, or what they need to do for you. It's about getting smarter, making better strategies, making more efficient strategies, and crafting better messages. Because if I want to convince you to buy an ice cream, whereas you don't want to, if it's to you, like, I need to use a different messaging or a different wording or tone of voice, whatever, compared to your friend, you know? So that's what I mean with messaging. That's the adaptation, the nuance, the details. You're only able to craft that based on, information from you, like knowing how you are. So that's what we basically do in terms of the, trying to get smarter and coordinate and consolidate, and then call a play, and then we play execute that play, come back. All right, are we on the right track? Yes. All right, continue. Are we not on the right track? No. What is it? Oh, this is this piece of information was missing. All right, get the information. Can we continue? Yes. All right. Can we not continue? Okay, pivot. No, like, so it's a continuous flow of information, action, information, action, information, action, or iteration. So that's what we're doing, like, day in, day out. Something that I wanted to end with that might be interesting is, all right, Ghazali, Indigenous peoples, you have like huge interest in all these things. What do you write, right? So like, do you write like documents every day, every single day? Absolutely not. Well, it's the less you write, the better, because that only confuses not only your team, but also the people that you're trying to influence. The people that you're trying to influence, you want them to have a very clear message, what you want them to do. So ideally, you will need two papers per negotiating stream. So for example, Article 6 has three negotiating streams, 6.2, 6.4, and 6.8. Before I go to COP, or before we start negotiating, we have an advocacy paper. Because we, in the most ideal case, you draft two papers. One is in the beginning, before you negotiate, and the second one is when you have a better idea of the current state of play. The first document that you write beforehand is the advocacy paper. The second document that you write when you have more information is the position paper, which is more detailed. The advocacy paper is simple. It's a little bit longer, but it's a base document. It is based on the decision text or the agenda of Article 6.2, bill of points. All right, this is what needs to happen on the topic of Article 6.2. This is what needs to happen on 6.4. This also needs to happen on 6.8. So those documents are usually between 2 and 4 pages. That's it. And bullet points. Bullet points, key messaging, so that it's easier for people that you want to influence to read. And those advocacy papers are base documents. So what I mean with that is like, or so that is your framework, you know? So you have framework, 6.2, 6.4, 6.8. All right, lots of damage as well. So we have 4 frameworks. Then you go into the negotiations. You listen to, all right, so what is the state of play? What's the state of negotiations? Oh, on 6.4, there are concerns about removals. Oh, by the way, we have concerns about removals. There's concern about environmental and social safeguards. Huh, great. We have concerns about environmental social safeguards. States want to send the removals document back, or they have comments and they want to send it back. So that is like a hook, right? All right. So this is that's the current state of play. They're taking a position, ergo, you are going to take a position. So you go back to your advocacy document. All right, so what was the position again on removals, on sustainable development tool, on grievance mechanism, et cetera, et cetera. All right, so then you go back, use that, and then you draft a 1-page position paper. And by 1 page, I don't mean like 1 page, no margins, and font 8. No, it is a super clear, lots of white space kind of document that includes in bullet points, no more than 5. Actually, preferably 4. 4 bullet points are like, these are the key asks or recommendations of indigenous peoples. That's when what you want to do. So you do like, all right, so for example, on 6.4, Article 6.4, from an indigenous people's point of view, what we're going to do is we are asking the CMA to send the removals recommendation back, as well as ensure that the Article 6 mechanism cannot be launched without the governance components in place, right? So you put that into a document, clear, and then what are the main concerns? You know, so like it's, because you listen to states, and it's like, oh, these are their concerns. Well, these are our concerns as well. And so you list them. Boom, one document. You send it to the states. But it's not like, hey, there's a position paper, goodbye, please do something with it. No, you tailor it. Again, you listen to, for example, what United States says, or Canada says, or Australia, or Colombia says. You listen to them, like, oh, right. So you draft the document, and then as like a cover letter, you send a text or an email like, hey, building upon the position of country so-and-so, we are sending you our position paper, looking forward to continuing this conversation with you on this topic or issues of mutual interest or common concern, you know? So you do that. So boom, 6.2, boom, 6.4, boom, 6.8, boom, on loss and damage fund. So you have 3 advocacy papers, which can be also, hopefully, also 3 position papers, but in a more condensed version and focus on the current state of play. And that is to help you as your team, as the caucus, as everyone else within your delegation to write, this is the framework. This advocacy document is your framework that's you are trying to achieve within the concept of COP or within the concept of climate change, but it needs to be relevant to the meeting that you're going to. And then you go to the meeting and then you listen. You listen and then you look at the advocacy document again. It's like, all right, then we, based on our occupancy document, this will be our position on so-and-so. So that is a little bit what I wanted to share with you about advocacy document and position paper. Obviously, as a caucus, if you go to the, we should have in these people's caucus website. If you go on there, you'll be able to see it. And hopefully you will only see those documents and not like a gazillion more documents on Article 6 on loss and damage. But I'm fairly certain that we're very focused and we're sufficient with these advocacy documents as well as these. Well, this is the first position paper. So the 6.4 position paper is the first one. We're still listening to 6.2. We're still listening to 6.8. And then, you know, it's also an invite with the bilateral meetings that we'll have, or like a hook or a document of discussion. So it has many purposes. And also, like we shared with, again, the our other constituencies, our friends and other organizations that want to help out. The more people that can amplify your message, the better. So that is why we have advocacy papers and position papers. And yeah, if you have what else can I talk about? Say, right. Quickly, I'll share with you how we develop a position paper. So issue arises, and all right, and there's an analysis, obviously. So you analyze the situation. You call a coordination meeting. Like, hey, everyone, I like to have a coordination meeting, and this is actual. We're at 9 p.m. on a Saturday, and this is actually what happened today. All right, so we come to the realization because we have enough information to draft a position paper. The next meeting is tomorrow. So the last thing what you want to do is to present member states a document tomorrow on Sunday, like a minute or like an hour or in the morning of when they have that meeting, when they're coming back. That's not what you want to do. So, because you want to give them time to consider the document that you're about to send them. So what do you do? 6 p.m. 6 p.m. is like, in my head was like the cutoff time. 6 p.m. Everyone wants to go home and everything else. Last time they checked their emails, or that's when many states have the coordination meetings. And that's when many negotiators make the bullet points for the next day. So run like the sweet spot is between 5:30 and 6:30 that you want to send that document. All right, then you backtrack. All right, so let's say 5:36 or 6 p.m. Give people enough time to consider a position paper, people to gather, to be informed. So eventually I call the meeting at like 3:30, so that everyone had a sufficient time, like 45 minutes to gather at the office. But in those 45 minutes, you want them to have something to work with, like a basic document. So you draft a very quick skeleton of a position paper. It's like, hey, this is what it could, what a draft could be. So that people have something like to take a bite out of, right? 45 minutes, people walk in, and this is how you do. Like, so you first, you provide the background, set the mindset. All right, guys, let's backtrack a little bit how we got to this point. 2022, COP27, this and this and this happened. What kickback or recommendation kickback to supervisory body, 1 year to do the work. Again, they submit again their work. Doesn't look like it is in line with what we want. So. And states as well, because of our latest reports. So recommendation is to send it back. This is the document, and now, not this is the document, and now I'll give those that were in the room, all right, provide a little bit of a more context. You know, what did you hear? And then be very, again, set aside your assumptions. What did you hear? And then you give people like enough information to work on the document. So they start, and but you also give the CTA, the call to action. The goal is to have a document by in an hour. Is that feasible for everyone? Yes, because they have a draft already. So in 1 hour, and then people start to talk, start to edit, like track changes in Google Docs is your friend. The last thing you want to do when it comes to a document like that is to take ownership. It's like, because you did the draft, the last thing you want to do is protect it. You are the one to facilitate it and let people participate in that process. So, yes, there were questions, and then you answer them, but it's not like, all right, no, that should not be in a text, or yes, that should be in a text. So if there's a question or a concern, you throw it out there. What do you think? What do you guys think? All right. Okay. Let's put it in. Not okay. All right. Let's leave it out for now, or find an alternative. That's it. And then if everyone is also after the hour, and we were done in like 45 minutes, because not only the draft, but actually like it's the process. So document ready, and then what you do is, all right, export PDF, send it to everyone in a group, like, hey guys, this is the document, please disseminate. But also while you're drafting it, it's like, all right, so what can we do? You can talk to this country, you can send it to this country, you can send it to that country. You call the strategy, online strategy, you make an inventory of what people can do to make sure that parties are getting this this document before tomorrow morning. So that all happens within a time span of 2 hours. And then you send it out, and then, like, so I've been, like, the whole time on my phone, sending a text message, like, by 5:30, you'll get a position paper from an ace people's on 6.4. Okay, great. Looking forward to reading it. So up until the moment that I was, like, started recording the daily debrief, I was sending text messages, like, and having conversations with the delegates, with civil society people, and everyone else. And then, obviously, you wait for tomorrow. And it is my hope that tomorrow at the daily debrief, hopefully we'll have like a daily debrief. I'll be able to come back to you and share whether or not, or in which way, our efforts have been fruitful. That is a daily debrief of COP28, days 2 and 3, live from Dubai, on Saturday, December 2nd, and it's Saturday. Tomorrow will be Sunday, and really thrown off by it. And as I know, many of my colleagues are thrown off it by as well. So it would literally mean the world to me if you could share this video with your friends, with your colleagues, talk about it, and catch you at the next episode. See ya.
My friends, you can now also listen to the Go Maluku podcast on Spotify. Listen while you use other apps or do other things. If you don't have Spotify, just open your Apple or Google Podcast or your favorite podcasting app and search for the Go Maluku podcast.